Aging meeting will please come to order. Roll call.
Here.
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 Chuck, here.
So you've all reviewed the agenda. May I have a motion to approve the agenda?
So move.
Second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? We have an agenda. You've reviewed the minutes from February 27th. May I have a motion to approve those minutes?
So moved.
There's all those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? At this point, we have two motions to consider, one on the bylaws. Is there a motion regarding the bylaw?
Move to approve the bylaws as discussed in our workshop.
I second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay, bylaws are approved. The second motion before us is to whether we want to write a letter of support to the County Council for as it considers a complete streets ordinance. We discussed that thoroughly in work session, the fact that the aging readiness plan called for complete streets low these many years ago, and we would like to continue to advocate for that. So do we have a motion to write a letter of support?
A motion.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
The motion to approve is passed. We had the aging readiness, or the Supportive Services Summit in March. It was well attended and very successful. Any comments on the Supportive Services Summit? Quiet group tonight. The report from the Area Agency on Aging and Disabilities.
I attended their meeting on March 21st, 2018. There was a review of the past state legislative session. The budget that was passed was very favorable to the Agency on Aging programs. The other thing that passed was necessary training for respite workers doing less than 300 hours a year was reduced, which will make it much easier to get volunteers for respite services. There was also a presentation on the Aging and Disability Services Care Coordination Program, what its goals are, eligibility, structure, and the role of the care coordinator. This is a volunteer program. People are called on and they volunteer to participate in the program, and it's really showing reduced costs and improved individual health outcomes. There was also a report on a pilot project called Caring Beyond Healthcare. And this pilot is being done by Legacy Salmon Creek Medical Center and the Agency on Aging. And it's a program to connect patients and their families to community resources as they leave the hospital. So again, the results are showing reduction in patient readmissions, reduction in healthcare utilization, and cost savings. So there's some wonderful programs going on at the agency. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Pat. Report on Clark County Public Health Advisory Council, Amy.
I'm working right now on finding places where the Public Health Advisory Council priority areas coincide with the Commission on Aging priority areas. They're very focused on children's health, but there are areas including looking at healthy communities and other health issues where we can consult and work with each other.
Thank you. So tonight is our second meeting on transportation. This year is our year-long focus on transportation. In February, we had Alan Della Torre, from Portland State University, giving us an overview of transportation. And tonight we're bringing it a little closer to home with Sean Donaghy, the Executive Director of CTRAN. For those of you who do not know Sean, he's been around a little bit, Ohio and Texas, and he's landed here fairly recently. And our community seems to like you, Sean, so we're really pleased about that. Transportation runs in the family, no pun intended. You're the third generation as a transit executive. So we welcome you here this evening to give us an overview of CTRAN. The top of the evening to you, Sean.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Commission. It's a pleasure to be here. As you know, CTRAN's doing some pretty amazing things out in the community, and we sure are proud of what we do. We're proud to serve all of our communities, and we're just happy to be able to do that in any capacity that we can. To kind of give you an idea of our C-VAN service specifically, we do about 246,000 C-VAN passenger boardings every year. And system-wide on fixed route, we actually do just a little bit under 6 million rides per year. So we do quite a bit of service here in Clark County in the public transportation benefit area. And we got a great group of employees that, they come to work every day and they want to do a great job for the community, so we're so proud of that. I always start off when I do management meetings, I show them these two pictures. And this picture, this first couple pictures is, the one on the right is back when we were actually Vancouver Bus Company, sometime back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. And then that second picture on the left there is a picture of the old transit district down here in downtown before we put the Vine Stop in. Then I always like to show them this picture. I always talk about what's different between the two pictures, and there's a lot of things that are different. You know, times have changed and things have changed a little bit. But the reality is what we were attempting to do back then is exactly what we're attempting to do right now, and that's provide world-class service to Clark County and all of our communities within that. So while the equipment has changed and the clothing has changed and the buses have changed, the one thing that hasn't changed is our desire and our wish to make sure that we're providing the best service we can to our community. So let's talk just real briefly about our mission and values. You know, our mission statement in our current condition is to provide safe, reliable, and efficient mobility choices, and we created that back in 2001. At the time, it probably was a really good mission statement from the standpoint of we had just had our state funding cut in 2001. So we were in a little bit of a situation where we were pretty much in survival mode. So really our goal every day was to come to work and be able to provide mobility choices for the folks of Clark County. We're actually in the process of revisiting our mission statement, and I'll kind of talk a little bit about our thought process on that. The one question I get asked all the time is, how does it feel to be a transportation provider? Are you just a transportation provider? And I tell people all the time that we are so much bigger than a public transportation organization. We're really proud of our employees because they carry the mantra that they're stewards of the community, and we believe that. It's more than just being a bus company for us. There are so many things that go into what we do and how we incorporate our organization and our brand into the community, and it kind of talks about, and we've got, just an amazing community with a dedicated elected group. Our board of directors, they do a fantastic job. They're elected from the county and the cities that work within the area, and even our elected officials that don't sit on our board, we have disagreements at times, but the reality is they work really hard for this county and they work really hard for the citizens of their own respective jurisdictions, and we're proud of that. We're proud to be a part of that. So when we talk about what the four benchmarks are for a successful public organization, at least for us, for CTRAN and here in Clark County, are economic development and economic support, jobs creation and access to jobs, and access to education and quality of life. And the way that we look at that is when we go back and we reevaluate service that we currently have that's in the system, and whenever we talk about how we want to implement new services, we go forward. If we can't impact in some way, shape, or form at least two of those, if not more, anytime we think about how we want to redirect the route or when we want to put service into play, then we're not doing the right thing for our community, and we need to make sure that we're always thinking about everyone in the community. And that really talks a little bit about how we're not just a transportation provider. We really want to be a source of economic development and how we can support that. We really want to be a job creator and how we get people to those jobs. We've got a lot of great university and colleges in the area. We want to make sure we have access to those as well. and quality of life. I mean, that's what public transportation is for, is to provide a better quality of life for all citizens within the county and within the cities, and we want to make sure we do that. So we've talked a lot about our brand image, and that's something that's really near and dear to my heart is what exactly does our brand represent? And the reality is what does it mean to us? I love this picture up in the corner because we've got a really nice clean bus and our transit center looks really, really good. That's us. That's who we are. That logo represents our employees. It represents our board. It represents our community. It represents everything. So we're very particular about our brand image and what it means. So what does it represent? Like I just said, it represents all of us. It represents every employee. You know, I always tell new employees when they come in the door, that as one employee, you represent the entire organization in everything that you do. And you have to remember that when you come to work every day and every time that you speak with our customers and every time you represent the community. That's quite a responsibility, but they do a great job at it. Who is responsible for our brand and how? Another question we ask our employees, everybody's responsible for it. We liken our brand to the same thing as any other public works that would be in the county, the police department, the fire department, public works. You know, we want our brand to be synonymous with helping the community, and that's what we're focusing on. So who sees our brand? Just customers? No, everybody does. In fact, that's part of our brand image initiative is that, you know, there are plenty of people that we would like to see ride the bus that just don't right now, but they also represent the community as well, so we need to make sure that our brand stands out not only to people who utilize our service, but anyone in the county who sees it. And it kind of goes back to what we've built recently in the past year, which is our community, our promise. And it really is kind of our mantra that we've used going forward, that as stewards of the community, we have to own that. We have to be a part of it in every single thing we do. And that's our promise to give back to the county. That's our promise to give back to the cities, that everything we do involves the community, and we have to keep everyone engaged in that movement. So let's talk about system planning for a second. We started recently what we call the creation of quadrants, which I asked the planning department to break down our public transportation service area into four major quadrants, and it's broken down into essentially Highway 99, 4th Plain, Mill Plain, and our external cities. And the idea behind that is what we're really going to do is we're going to take each quadrant piece by piece. We're going to review every single part of our service that's in that quadrant, and we're going to determine whether or not we have the best utilization of service, whether we have the right equipment within that area, whether there are areas that are underserved that we have not looked at. So it's an efficiency. It's a way to provide efficiency, but at the same time, it's also a way to make sure that we're reaching out to all the customers that we do, because Clark County is growing at just an astronomical rate, and we want to try to keep up with that. High-capacity transit corridors and BRT. You may have heard that we're having a great deal of conversation and looking to move forward on the Mill Plain BRT, and we'll kind of talk about that. There's a question toward the back end, and I'd like to elaborate on the BRT just a little bit. But to give you an idea about the Vine on 4th Plain, we've seen a 45% rise in our ridership along the 4th Plain corridor since we've implemented the Vine BRT. We've actually seen that 45% increase almost 20% over the past couple months. So it's really growing at a pretty rapid pace. And we've got a lot of our business community and the colleges and a lot of the major stakeholders along Mill Plain who are asking us how soon we can get Mill Plain BRT up. And I'd love to tell them next week, but it won't be next week. Our service hours increase. You know, when we did our biennial budget a few years ago, we were approved for a 17,000-hour service increase. And the one thing that I've asked our team to do is not implement any service increase until we've actually looked at all of the service that we currently provide to make sure that it's as efficient as it can be. We do not want to add new service on just for the sake of adding on new service. We want to make sure it's in the right areas, serving the right portions of the community, and that the service that we already have out there is designed in the right place, which goes into streamlining of current service. Mobility on demand is a big one for us, and I think we'll talk a little bit about that as we talk about how that affects our citizens who are aging. So there are certain portions of the county that just aren't served by public transportation, and what we're looking into right now is really mobility on demand. How do we leverage some of our partners between Uber and Lyft, some of these other transportation network companies to get people to the network in the interim while we're unable to service portions of the county? So that's and it also kind of talks too about how it ties all of our services together. We've got fixed route and paratransit and our connector service. We've got Vanpool. We want to try to find a way to bring all those together in one place so it's kind of a one-stop shop for customers. So there's kind of a two-tiered thing we're doing with mobility on demand. Our frequency between external cities is of concern for us. We know that Ridgefield and Camas and Washougal and LeCenter and Battleground, they continue to grow. And we need to be able to provide some better service for those cities as we continue to move forward with our own master plan. And then our C-VAN network and C-VAN and network connectivity. As the UGA continues to grow, as we continue to look at the population growth, we need to make sure that we have our C-VAN and network connectivity where it needs to be to support the citizens within the county. So one thing that we've done recently is we just took to the board what our strategic priorities are. And the idea behind the strategic priorities are that every time that we engage in a project or every time that we engage in something from an organizational standpoint, we need to tie it back to a strategic priority so that we're really focusing on what the needs of the community are in addition to the focus of the needs of C-TRAN. And we rolled those into five, safety and security, world-class service and ridership, fiscal duty, community and governmental stewardship, and our team. And there's a lot of things that kind of go into each one of those, but really the goal is with it being very circular, which was intentional, that when we talk about projects and we want to go out for new projects or we want to talk about how we're going to expand service or we want to talk about how we're going to better a product that we have, it really has a touch point in every single one of these strategic priorities. So when we think it through, we have to make sure there's a safety and security component and how does that roll into our service. Are we being fiscally responsible when we do that? What connections have we made in the community, either in terms of our elected officials or groups that we continue to do business with? And then our team. I think that's sometimes an overlooked part of organizations is we need to make sure that we understand the impacts of what that's going to do for our employees, whether we need to bring on new employees or do they have the resources they need to get the job done. So we want to make sure that we cover that base as well. So we looked at the stats, and the stats, these are things that we look at all the time. And one thing that I think really surprises us is when you look at the expected rate of growth in Clark County between 2005 and 2030, 158% increase in ages 60-plus. And I think that when we talk about that from a planning perspective, there are a lot of census data. There's a lot of charts that we continue to look at because the one thing I think public transit as a whole, not necessarily C-TRAN, but I think it's nationwide that there's some suffrage in is that if you take a map of the system from 20 years ago and you put a map of the system up today, it's not that different. And the problem is things have changed dramatically in this county in 20 years, whether that be growth or whether that be shifting of where people move to or where people choose to age. And so we need to do a better job and continue to do a better job of managing the statistical data while we're talking about how we want to manage our service. And we think that's very important going forward. So we look at a lot of maps like this one in our planning department, which is this is the age readiness transit for Central Vancouver. We get a lot of this stuff either out of reports that are formed either through the Census Bureau or some of them with this one, I believe, came from AARP. So there's a lot of great information out there that talks about aging readiness plans and where transit fits into that. And it was odd that there were 10 or 11 slides and transit only had one slide because, for me, providing that quality of life and that connectivity is huge to being age-ready in the county. So, we need to make sure that we're talking to people that we need to talk to and having a bigger impact on that. So on the community assistance side, C-TRAN, to connect to senior services and community transit services is a focus for us. We always want to make sure that, if there's agencies that we do business with that help us sometimes outside of the service area or even sometimes within the service area, we want to make sure we have a good partnership with them. We have a few organizations that we actually pass through some 5310 money from the government to help them really provide some supplementary service to outside our service area and other portions of the county. And we're very thankful for those. I'm very thankful for those agencies because, we wouldn't be able to provide some of these services, and they're able to connect people back into our network, and we're very thankful for that. In-home care is one that we continue to look at as well. And Walt Gordon's here today. He's our paratransit manager, and he does an excellent job of really looking at all the impactors that go into our C-VAN service and go into our fixed route, and in-home care is one of those that we look at as well as the population continues to age, What portion of them require in-home care? How can we help out with that? And for us, it's a matter of how can we get people via transportation to help out people who need in-home care? How can we transport people from their homes to health providers? Family caregiver support, same thing. How can we help family caregivers get to where they need to be, either whether that's to assist with rides to health providers or whether that's to get to somebody's house to help them and provide that support? And then connectivity to health service providers, which is key for us in the area. We want to make sure that, you know, the health field continues to grow. There are doctor's offices and there are health service providers popping up all over the county. And we need to make sure they're part of our service area. And we need to make sure that our current riders and our future riders have access to these health service providers throughout the network with really with ease, without having any issues while they're trying to get there. And then complete streets, stop and travel safety, and that's a big issue for us. We've had a lot of conversations with both the county and the city, and I think there's a really good collective effort all the way across the board when we talk about complete streets and really travel safety. So when we go in and we, you know, there may be projects in areas that need to be, that might be private in nature, but the public aspect of it is there's sidewalks, there are amenities along there that need to be taken care of, and we work very closely with the county and the cities where that construction and that development is happening to make sure that whatever way that we can help provide any assistance in terms of managing our Complete Streets program, that we're able to do that. And then, you know, it's a good conversation. I think that when we look at it, we're aware that it's a little bit of an uphill run right now, and we're trying to cover as many areas as we can. But I'm very happy to see that these are continue to moving in that direction when we do those type of projects. So this is a current map of our C-Trans service area, which also includes the C-Van service area. It doesn't have a lot of our external cities on it, but just to kind of give you an idea of where we go, the interesting notation is that a lot of our C-Van riders, they do use the fixed route network, and we want that. We want them to be able to have that quality of life, and we've got a great group, which we'll talk about in a minute, that really assist our riders that are certified through C-Van on how to utilize our fixed route network, and they just do an amazing job of that. As you can see, you know, between our we just have quite a few services, and we go quite a bit through the county, and it's always interesting to me to see that map in its entirety with all the routes. So what services do we provide? Well, we have our fixed route network service, which is really the backbone of what we do. And I think the important thing is there's been such a focus over the past decade and maybe 15 years to try to help those individuals who typically would utilize a C-Van service to introduce them to the fixed route network, because it really opens up all kinds of possibilities. The fixed route network goes so many places that we want to try to find some connectivity points. And in fact, some of the conversation that we've had over the past couple years is if somebody's not too far from a fixed route network, maybe we utilize a C-Van service to get them to fixed route and then let them utilize a fixed route through the system and then bring them back through C-Van. Our commuter service, which is pretty much our express service into Portland, it's tough to get into Portland these days, in case you haven't tried to get over there. We've got a lot of citizens throughout the county that utilize that service. That's not quite as big as our fixed route, but it's a big piece of what we do. Our connector service, which is a little smaller, we have that out in Ridgefield and LaCenter and Camas and a little bit in Battleground. And essentially, it's sort of a dial-a-ride service that's not C-Van. And what we're really trying to do with our connector service is find a better way to integrate that in between our C-Van service and between our fixed route network for a little better efficiency and connectivity. And we're excited about that. We think as time goes on, we'll really have a better connected network through that. And then our C-Van service, between the curb service and door-to-door, I have to say that having worked with our C-Van operators, they just do an amazing job. And I'll tell you that the one thing that I really admire about our C-Van employees that our fixed route employees do as well, but there's such a personal connection in C-Van to the customers. And that always means something to me. I think that when you get into public transportation, that's what it's really all about. It's about that connection to your community, and it's about the connection to the citizens that you serve. And when I see the pride that our employees take every time that they have a very personal connection with their customers, it means a great deal to me. And I like to brag about that, because we really do just have a world-class team, and they do an amazing job. our shopping shuttle, which runs on the first and third Tuesday of the month. I had the pleasure of meeting the last shopping shuttle when they were getting off last week or a couple weeks ago. And the one thing they kept asking me for was, we need more days. And I said, you know what, I think we might be able to take a look at that. So Walt and I have been having a lot of conversation about how many times we can ride the shopping shuttle. In fact, I think I'm going to try to catch the next shopping shuttle with them because I got to do some shopping too. But, you know, that's a big one for us. I think we initially didn't know how it was going to be received, and it really kind of took off. And, you know, it's been a staple for a little while, and there's a lot of people that ride it, so we want to make sure that we continue to look at that service. It really is a good service. And then travel ambassadors in our travel training program, which I'll talk about here a little bit right now. Our travel training program helps community members plan their trips, pay for their fare, read and understand schedules, how to ride and recognize buses and bus stops, and transfer within the system. I'll tell you, our travel trainers are amazing, and we're actually looking to add on a few more travel trainers because what we find is that some of our C-Van riders who are just unfamiliar with the fixed route network, they're not quite sure what to do on the fixed route network. We can get our travel trainers out there, and they can really take them out and show them how the network works and really the unlimited amount of places you can go versus C-Van. And they really do such a good job of getting everybody involved and getting out and getting into the system. And then we've seen quite an increase of people moving off of C-Van into the fixed route network because of our travel training. And so we're going to look to add a few more people onto that. And then our travel ambassadors, which are a great asset to our training program, and we're very thankful for that. And they're community advocates that that advocate for C-Van and advocate for a fixed route network on behalf of the agency. So, we're always happy to have advocates of C-Tran, and the one thing I really appreciate is when we sit in a room and we have conversations about what could be better, that they come very, very collected, and they're very specific about things that do and do not work in the system, and they want to know what the results are going to be from that. And they are very interested in holding us responsible and accountable for making sure that when we have these conversations with the community or that when we talk about service changes, that their thoughts and opinions are very intertwined in the changes that we make. So they're very important to what we do, just as any citizen feedback is for us. So on the service improvement side, we got a few questions that I just kind of wanted to chat about real quick. And the first one is, how does someone get from their home to the nearest C-Tran bus stop if it's too far to walk? And the answer to that is we're working on that right now through our Mobility on Demand project. What we're really attempting to do is build a better connectivity between. We have our connector bus right now, but it doesn't probably serve the purpose that we really want long term. And we really need to try to look into for areas that we can't go into currently. We want to make sure that we've got an opportunity through either other service providers that help us or Uber or Lyft to try to get passengers into the C-Van network or into the C-Tran fixed route network. So we're working on that. That's something that's coming down the pike. And actually, Scott Patterson in our planning department, that's his number one priority for this year. So, we'll make sure that Scott gets something out on that relatively shortly. He's been a little busy on Mill Plain BRT, so won't beat him up too much. What are C-Trans programs that assist with senior mobility? You know, we've got quite a few of them. As we mentioned, we've got the travel trainers, and we've got our travel trainer and our travel ambassador program. In addition to C-Van, the program's really doubled in size for our transit ambassadors and our travel trainers, which is why we want to see some expansion of that. The shopping shuttle is another one that we talked a little bit about that we want to try to expand as well. Trip planning, C-Trans sponsored one call, one click transportation resource center, the human service resource reserve a ride program, and Catholic Community Services volunteer transportation program are all areas that can assist with those mobility issues as well. We look quite frequently to see where we have opportunities to try and expand the network, and we're going to continue to do that. We do that every day. We do that in our planning department. So a lot of those things are coming down the pike, especially as the county continues to grow outward. What initiatives may C-Tran want to take that would benefit the older county population that the commission would advocate for to the city council? One of the big things for us, and Walt's been talking about this for a long time, is universal design of all commercial and retail development. And that's one thing that we've had a large conversation about with a lot of the cities, is we want to sit on the Economic Development Council. And we want to have a conversation about the 2-year, 5-year, 10-year, 20-year development plans for cities, because we want to make sure that our customers are taken care of through any development that takes place throughout the cities and the counties. To me, the most irresponsible public transportation is the one that comes in after the fact and just puts up bus stop signs. That's not the way to handle responsible public transit. And I think this is one for us that's key, that if we're sitting at the table, we can really have an impact on the decisions that are being made for all of our riders, and really try to share some efficiencies and really drive some of that cost down, but make sure that on the front side, all those issues are addressed before they come in. A lot of that also goes into complete streets and sidewalks, and we always welcome any help on that whatsoever, because with all of the codes that are out there in terms of construction builds, complete streets can get a little expensive. I think that sometimes you lose sight of the cost that's associated with just trying to rebuild portion of a crosswalk at the end of a street and a sidewalk. I mean, the cost is can be astronomical if you're doing the entire block. We want to try to share those resources. So any help we could get on that would be worth our while as well. We try to partner with everybody that we can to make sure that we're looking at any avenue that we've missed or anything that we can try to assist with, but that's a big one for us. We're starting to see the new development along C-Trans Bus Rapid Transit Line, the Vine, and are aware planning is underway for its expansion along Mill Plain. Is C-Trans expecting to see larger numbers of riders on the Vine because of the new construction is the same expected on Mill Plain? The answer to that is yes. I talked a little bit earlier, our ridership on the Vine is up 45%. I think that's largely due to the frequency that it provides. I think if you provide frequent service, people are going to want to ride it. We expect very similar issues along Mill Plain. I mean, there's a great deal of economic development opportunity along Mill Plain. There are a lot of businesses who are looking for that real good, viable public transportation element to bring into their business. And so I expect that, right now, currently, to give you an idea for the project, it requires about 2,500 riders a day to meet a medium standard for the FTA. We exceed that, and on some days we almost double that along Mill Plain. So it really is the next big opportunity for us, and that will involve a lot of things. It won't just involve the BRT. It will involve our connectivity on C-VAN. It will involve our connectivity with other routes. There's a lot that's going to go into that. One thing that we have had a real long conversation about is in terms of Fisher's Landing. Fisher's Landing is a good termination point right now for the system in its current condition, but if we want to put a 10 or 15-minute service along Mill Plain, Fisher's Landing is not the place to terminate. We need to look at a better connected network for C-VAN coming from the east side to the west side, anybody coming south from the battleground area onto the back end of 192nd between 164 and 192nd. So we're having a lot of conversation about maybe we need to put another transit center out there and keep Fisher's Landing as a commuter hub. So there's a lot of conversation that's going into that. We love what the Vine's doing. We love the idea of what it can be on Mill Plain. And when we're done with Mill Plain, we're going to head straight to Highway 99. And, we're really excited about that. And, we think it's a great opportunity for really the county as a whole, but C-Tran as well. The Vine has just been amazing. To give you an idea, we were trying to find some office space for our customer service department because we're out of room in our main facility. So we wanted to find office space along 4th Plain, and we couldn't find any because everybody was eating up all the land around the Vine stops. And the property value's gone up quite a bit, and we've got a lot of business stakeholders who are calling us on the phone every day wanting to know when we're going to head over to the next block because they're ready to go. So I'm excited about that. And how do people who live in rural areas mile from the nearest C-Trans stop access transit? And that kind of goes back to the first question that was asked. That mobility on demand is going to be key for us, because what we really want to do is, right now we're sort of siloed in this idea that we've got the connector service, we've got commuter service, we've got fixed route, and we've got C-VAN. And really what I just want is service. that anybody who needs a service just gets on the service. And that means we have to do a better job of connecting C-VAN to fixed route, really utilizing a portion of C-VAN for what it was really meant for, make the network larger, make it more efficient, make it faster, really decrease those travel times for our customers. And I think we'll be able to do that through mobility on demand and some of these other projects that we have on the horizon. I would tell you that things are moving pretty fast over there. We every day, we recognize that technologically we're a little behind everybody else and some of the other transit systems. And the big one for me is access for our customers to be able to pull up stuff on their smartphone or pick up the phone and call somebody and really get that information as soon as they need it. And that's really the primary focus that we're working on right now. We've procured a new operations system that will do a lot of things for us. It'll really look at the GPS, and it will put out the real-time information, and they'll be able to access all of that sort of in a one-stop shop on an application that we're building that'll have access to the Hop Fast Pass. There's a lot of stuff on there. The Hop Fast Pass is here. It's been up now for about, 10 months, because it was the first month I was here, so it was 10 months. And we've got a lot of great responses out of that. There are a few bugs in the system that we need to work out, but really having that interconnectivity between the systems has just been amazing. I'm really looking forward to when we can implement that on C-VAN. And it's slated right now, I believe, for early 2019 or mid-2019. When you work with three different transit providers, we all have to make sure we're on the same page because we don't want to roll something out that doesn't work. But it's working really well on the fixed route network and the fare capping. I mean, we're the first regional transportation as an agency, but as a region as well, so TriMet and Portland Streetcar, to have that type of a fare capping system. Nobody else has that in the United States, so we're pretty excited about that. And that's what I have, unless anybody's got any questions.
Thank you. So, do you have any examples of public-private partnerships that you could share with us?
Yeah, I can give you an example of one that we're working on right now, Fisher's Landing. We've got a transit-oriented development project that we're working on over there where we're soliciting some proposals and really mapping out what Fisher's Landing could look like if it had private retail space and some livability there, either some multifamily units or something like that built on top of the retail. In other areas that I've been fortunate to serve, there are some really good examples of public-private partnership. I think a lot of that comes back to federal funding, because I think there's a lot of private partnerships, they want to know that there's that backing from the federal government. So when you've got that strong program that's been pulled into question as of late on infrastructure, it's made the public-private partnership a little more difficult than it should be. But I think Fisher's Landing will be a good example of the public-private partnership and really true transit-oriented development about walkability within an area as much as can be down there and really building that retail space into a transit center and really integrating quality of life items into public transit and kind of integrating the two from there. So, and I think when we start Mill Plan, there'll be a lot more of that.
So do public-private partnerships extend to services like Lyft and Uber? I mean, do you have working relationships with services like that? Or?
It can. We're working on that right now. I can tell you that other agencies I've been at, we did. We had direct partnerships with them where if somebody wanted to connect to our network, they could take an Uber to the nearest transit station, and it cost them a dollar or something, and then we picked up a portion of that bill, as long as they did it through our application. So that's what we're looking at C-TRAN right now on mobility on demand.
Donna?
I live, thank you for your presentation. I live off 192nd. You stop at 164th. You're aware of that development on 192nd. It's going to be a nightmare. We need true public transportation assistance. 14 is already jammed. I don't know what's going to happen there. I'm sure you're working on that, but what are you? Do you have some plans?
We are. Actually, our goal from day one when we had conversations about the Mill Plain BRT was under all conditions it had to go all the way to 192nd. In fact, we've had some conversation about how we could connect that, beyond 192nd, because there's Fishers is out there. There's a few other businesses beyond 192nd that we think need to be served as well. We've also taken a look at how far out we can take Fourth Plain. If we were able to financially sustain that at some point in time, could we connect Fourth Plain to 162nd and really have a pretty good corridor with Mill Plain out to 192nd and have some connectors in there? We do have the Route 37 out in that direction, and it's that every time I go by a Route 37 bus, it is full. So we know that we've got some opportunity specifically between 164th and 192nd.
Chuck?
Thank you. And welcome to our community, by the way. I know when Fourth Plain was designed and all of that was going on and everything, there was a huge focus on just getting the Vine here and all of that. Today, however, I see that all of those streets coming into Fourth Plain, not all of them, but let's go and say most of them, in the low-income districts, of course, do not have adequate, safe sidewalks for people to get down to those very nice, safe bus stops that we have today on the Vine. And I would really hope that with Mill Plain, that's part of the discussion that has to go and be looking at the total volume of people that is coming into that and how do they get to that safely. Because we do not have that right now then with Fourth Plain.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And to just talk about Fourth Plain for a second, we review a lot of that. So when we go out and we look at the stops, and we've had requests to actually add some additional stops along Fourth Plain, one thing that we're very conscious of in its current condition is that we need to have some focus on really finalizing some of the complete streets projects that connect into the Fourth Plain stops. And that's been a big concern for us on Mill Plain as well, specifically as you get out toward the I-205 interchange. That entire area is perfect for bus rapid transit, but in its current condition, it is not safe at all for bus rapid transit. And that's just a lot of congestion out there. That's nobody's fault. It's just a matter of having a lot of people in that area. And I think when we look at Mill Plain as a whole, that's very concerning to us because there's a lot of portion of Mill Plain that we think is okay. There's a few portions right there at the 205 interchange by that Walmart. And really when you get across toward Chocolove and you get on the block a little bit, there are a few areas down there that we're a little concerned about, and we want to make sure that we address those while we're putting in the stops.
Yeah, I really think that was really and I remember us going through all of this with the Vine and everything, and there was such a focus on just getting the project done and all of that. But now then, looking back, you know how easy it is to do that. I really see, and especially with, I've driven around through there quite a bit just to get a real feel for it and everything. Buses stopping, school buses stopping, kids getting out, having to walk down in the neighborhoods and everything. There just isn't a good, safe way for those neighborhoods to be able to get down to that transportation, so I just offer that up.
Yeah, that, especially with some of the school children, that's been a concern for us because we've seen quite a big increase in our student ridership because of our Apple Pass. In fact, by the time the school year is over, we think we will be somewhere in the ballpark of 200,000 school rides since the beginning of the last school year, which is quite a bit more than we had last year. So when we look at those things, and a fair amount of them are riding the Vine in the 37 and the 32, and a lot of those areas are not conducive to good walking areas when you get off the bus, so we're definitely taking a look at that.
And you know, I remember 10 years ago when we were talking about accessibility, we weren't even talking, you know, seniors weren't even on the horizon yet, you know, we weren't even there. But we were talking about disabilities and all that. And I've got to say, man, we really made leaps and bounds in great ways to provide a lot of really good transportation that way and everything, you know. But getting our neighborhoods into these corridors safely is a, I see, is a real huge problem.
Yeah, I agree.
Amy, and then Temple.
Thank you so much for your presentation. It's been interesting and it's been informative. You talked about this a little bit. Could you take us through your process when you find out that there's going to be a brand new, huge development coming up? It'll take a while to build, but the first people who move in there may need transportation. They're not they're more than a mile from your fixed route. North of Battleground, I mean, what's your process for getting going with that?
I think we approach it from a couple different aspects. The first one is, you know, we really want to know about the development ahead of time. I think we're able to better prepare ourselves for what transportation needs would arise in that community if we knew about it. And I think that's something that we've done a pretty good job of, but not to the level that I think we can be. So our team's really focusing on that aspect of it, of how much more impact can we have sitting on those development councils or sitting with the contractor and really having a conversation about the layout. The second part of that really goes back to when we talk about where we want to put routes and where we want to put service. Right now, we're bound by the 2005 urban growth boundary area, so that's the service area. So we've had a lot of concerned citizens who have called and said, hey, I live in Vancouver. Why don't I have service? And the answer to that is because they're not in the UGA, unfortunately. And, you know, that's not something you want to explain to somebody. But so when we see all this growth, we see this push where really the external cities are kind of moving in and Vancouver's moving out throughout the county, that we're getting to a point where we may need to review some of those from an urban growth boundary standpoint. You know, there's also other opportunities for us that, you know, if we can provide fixed route service in certain areas, that provides us opportunities to do things. But if we don't know where that development's happening, that's an issue for us. So we really need to start by getting in on the front side of being in those meetings. And we really don't want to say anything. We just want to be a silent observer in the back and say, hey, that'd be a really great place to put a bus stop. Or I like to call them transit districts. Maybe there's three or four blocks that are really close that provide access to two or three different routes to where they're relatively short, where people have to walk to catch another route. So, you know, that's a big focal point for us.
Thank you. Temple.
My question tags on to that. When you're talking about wanting to be at the table with the EDCs or how we can help advocate, like with the county council, what are some of the things that are happening or aren't happening that we could also help be aware of in development, in planning? Like when a new development's going in, what are some of the things that make it more or less transit friendly?
Yeah, I think probably a little beyond the transit friendly portion of it is when we get in on it late, it just becomes a bus stop. So that's not always the best way to go about handling public transportation. If we were able to get in on it a little sooner and really understand what permits were being applied for, the layout of the actual construction happening itself, we would be in a better position to have a conversation about cutouts on the street for safety issues. And really, those are the big drivers for us. It's not so much that we can't put public transportation there. It's, are we putting the right kind of public transportation there? Is it safe to get to the stop? Is it a place that you would be willing to wait, you know, 5-10 minutes for a bus? Or is it open on a street that's not lighted correctly? I would say that everybody that we ask for help with, you know, at the cities and the counties, I mean, they turn around our requests very quickly, and they do a good job. I think it's more of a matter of, at some point in time, all of us need to be at the same table. The only example I can give you that is when I first came on board, we were trying to, when we opened up Hop Fast Pass along the Vine, but we weren't able to deal with the payment system yet because the fiber wasn't connected along Fourth Plain. And what we found was, is we needed to go to the fiber box but so did the county, and so did the city, and so did some guy from Comcast. So getting those four people together can be a little bit of a challenge sometimes. And I think when we pool those resources, we're in a better position to deal with that. But I'll tell you that any time that we've called over and asked somebody for help, I mean, they are amazing. We call the county, they're right on it. We call the cities, they're right on it. And I think it's just really pushing that idea of having all those people in the room when we talk about the construction aspect of it will probably help us in the long run.
So questions from the audience? Please go to the microphone if you have a question for Sean.
No questions from Walt.
That's beyond my technology capability. I'm enjoying my 8th month as a transportation consultant, but before I became a transportation consultant, I spent 6 years being the project manager planning and building the Vine. And so I can answer some of your questions about how we got to where we located stations, how we made decisions, and some of those implications. But first, I want to thank Mr. Donahue and Commissioner Lentz for spending a Sunday afternoon out at Clark Regional Wastewater for the League of Women Voters Transportation Forum. I found it very energizing, but also very educational, so I appreciate your time at that. I also want to note a couple things when we talk about planning with development. If you go along the Vine, there was a couple of developments that we actually worked with the developer to lay out our stations as well as plan for their future development. One is in front of the Walmart. If you go to the Walmart at Grand, you'll notice a big fence. Well, that's planned to be a transit-oriented development when they can get a transit-oriented developer in there to do that. But we designed that Vine station so you could just walk off the Vine bus, walk right into like a shop or something that would be built along in front of Walmart. The second one is at 78th Avenue over by where there's a lot of construction going on. Well, that construction is going to be a CMAR, mixed-use complex, medical services, and a 6-story apartment complex for affordable housing. We worked directly with the engineers designing that site so we could design the Vine station. They could design the access. You walk right off the Vine bus, go right into the front door of that complex when it's built. So it's very key, and I would encourage, as you develop the Mill Plain corridor, look at Tower Mall, look at some of those future opportunities to design the direct access, because that really helps design it into the system. I also noted you had a slide up that was the transit slide from the aging readiness plan. And basically that slide was C-Trans system map in the city of Vancouver area. What it didn't show, I think what Commissioner Freyer was talking about, is it doesn't show the barriers to getting to the Vine stations or any transit stations. And I know we had a very long discussion with locating the Vine stations along 4th Plain because, yeah, we didn't have sidewalks, so we either had a decision to make, either we just didn't put a Vine station there at all, which really hindered transit access in general, or tried to work with the City of Vancouver to maybe have a future plan for some sidewalk access. And in fact, one of those, we did a joint grant that I think the project's about ready to go, which was to build a couple of walkways around the Todd Road area. So I know that the there's a community development block grant program. I think the new federal budget doubled the amount going into that program, I think. Councillor Stewart, I think that's the Clark County Community Services administers that program, the Community Development Block Grant. And so I would suggest it'd be nice to work with that program, and that's another area where this body could work with Clark County to set, look at some priorities for filling in those sidewalk and access projects, not just in the city of Vancouver, but along Highway 99 and other locations as well. So thank you again, and that's just my comments.
Okay. Other comments? Councillor Stewart, thank you.
Good evening, Council. And I was going by and just stopped in to sit for a few minutes, and I've been here an hour because the presentation was fascinating and very interesting. And that's after I've had about 7 years' experience sitting on the CTRAM board, but didn't have the good fortune to do it when Sean was there. So I want to say I find the leadership that you're presenting outstanding, and I appreciate it, and I know the entire community does. I did hear a comment about large housing developments that are taking place, multifamily senior living centers that are out more in what are considered sort of the outlying areas, like 192nd. So that is very much now an urbanized area. And that's the whole thing about land use planning and what we call the Growth Management Act. The intent is to have the larger densities within the areas that you have other public services, such as transit service. But the need and the demand has sort of expanded past those boundaries, and we haven't yet caught up. But the whole issue here is land use planning for service to seniors, particularly where they are living in these more combined senior housing, sometimes with partial care, sometimes full care. And we're going to get in sync. The whole goal is to get in sync with all this so that the majority of multifamily living is within the boundaries because there are financial limitations to what CTRAN can do to expand service and how fast that is. So this is a fascinating conversation because it really brings everything all together. So thank you for inviting this very interesting guest, and it's been fascinating.
Thank you. Other comments or questions?
If you don't mind.
Yeah.
Thank you. Sean, I have a couple questions for you. I apologize to everyone for coming in late. I had a bit of an emergency this afternoon and had to take care of my 14-month grandson. And my choice was to bring him here and have him completely disrupt the meeting or come late. So I'm very interested in your comments about being involved on the front end of the planning process for commercial and residential. Do you send staff members to pre-application conferences with the city and county?
We get a list of anytime someone puts in a permit. The county and the cities have been really good about sending us information about developers who are looking, especially on multifamily housing or to give you an example, the grocery store in Ridgefield. And we've had a lot of conversation about, you know, we need to make sure that's accessible by bus, so make sure you show us the plans. Our goal is to, in fact, part of one of our strategic goals for 2018 through 2020 is to really put more of our staff into those actual meetings. Be in each city, have a conversation about the economic development, what projects are on the horizon. And we think that'll help us a lot to be able to say, look, the way you're building it, maybe you need to think about access to the street so that we can get a C-van in there to do door-to-door. Or if we need to do a fixed route by there, how far are all of the buildings from the nearest bus stop, where the one on the front side may be very close, but the one in the back end of the complex may be a quarter mile, and that's just not conducive for certain citizens. So, you know, those are typically the things we look at. And we want to be on as many of those development councils as we can be on.
The pre-op conference is the primo time to give your input, because many times people want to change things after it's been sort of, and then that causes a lot of heartburn on everybody's end. My other question is, one of the precepts that I learned early on with transportation was that people want to be able to wait with dignity. And as part of my preparation for your talk, I've been surveying around my neighborhood for bus stops. Mm-hmm. And I see a lot of people, particularly here in the Northwest, not as much as it was in Texas, but shelter is really important. So how do you, you mentioned Walmart. Does Walmart participate in building things for their customers to be able to wait with dignity, or is that all on C-TRAN?
It can. I think it depends on the partnership. And, I think that's been a little bit of a new venture for us, is really getting specific about the businesses that we're having conversations with. Walmart's a big one. I mean, we have so much traffic to the Walmarts throughout the system that we want to, on occasion, we've actually had conversation about, do we want to even pull in the lot? Because, the one on Mill Plain is a perfect example of, we drop somebody off on the street, you got to walk almost a half a mile to get to the building. Somebody's not going to do that. From the shelter perspective, I totally agree with you. Our board just approved the contract for 130 new shelters to go in the system. We have quite a few out there already. In fact, I think we have, close to 1,000. There's quite a few out there. But the things that are important to me are, I was riding along Mill Plain, and a customer gets on the bus at Providence, and they said, hey, if I'm going east, there's a really pretty shelter right here. If I'm going back west, there's nothing. And I said, well, that's a problem. So I wrote it. We write those things down. And I'll tell you that our employees ride the system. It's a mandate. It's part of their job that if you work for a public transit agency, you got to ride the system. So when they go out every month, they do quality assurance checks. So we have a survey online that they can pull up on their phone. And while they're riding the bus, they can punch in things like, hey, we need to put a shelter here, or something doesn't look right, or this is broken. But shelters are a big deal for us because we know – somebody told me it rains here. I just found that out a couple months ago. But we don't want people to wait outside, and especially in the summertime. We don't want them to wait outside in the heat. And we can't have shelters everywhere, but we want to be strategic about where shelters are, specifically in front of grocery stores and in front of health service providers. I mean, we want to make sure that we're taking care of those larger areas where there's a lot of people that wait at the stop.
Last question. I understood from a friend that you have on your app a way that you can punch in the number of the bus stop, and I have now noticed that they all are separately numbered, and find out when the bus is coming. What's the name of the app?
Well, it's the number. It's the dial a ride reminder. Ride reminder.
Ride reminder.
Yeah. Okay. And so to give you an idea of what we're trying to get to is – that gives you a predictive time. So if you're at the stop and you punch in the stop number, it'll tell you what the next predictive bus coming by. So it'll give you the scheduled time. What we're doing right now is we're building an app in real time. So if somebody pulls it up on their phone, it'll actually show them exactly where the bus is on their phone. And so that's really what we want to get.
That's in development.
It's in development now. And, I've had that in the other two places I've been, so I was a little surprised when I got here and we didn't have that. So I told them they had to expedite that one, because I always like to know where that bus is at when I'm out trying to catch it. So,
very good. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I just want to say thanks to.
Yeah, I was going to bring your attention to this. We did have a person submit some questions, and you didn't have time to look at them until you got here. One specifically was, many buses are late, especially at the first of the month. Can you say a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so the one thing that we've noticed with some of the growth, especially along our major corridors, not so much on the Vine, but when you think about the northbound, especially the Salmon Creek, 99th Street area, and especially going out Mill Plain on the 32 where it comes in on the back end, and then the 37 when it goes out to 192nd, we're seeing some delays at peak time in the morning and in the afternoons. And that concerns us a little bit. There's a pretty good bottleneck at 205. We're not quite sure how we need to adjust the schedule, because we don't want to lengthen the time of the trip. There's only certain portions of the day where we're probably pretty fairly behind.
You're aware of it and looking at it?
Yeah, we try to look at that all the time. I think that as we move toward the bus rapid transit on Mill Plain, it'll solve that. But it doesn't solve some of the other problems we have through the orchards and really all the way out to 99th. We've started to see a lot more traffic congestion out there, which is interesting. And downtown's been a problem, and I promise I won't talk about the I-5 bridge. But when cars get off I-5 when there's congestion and they take up space in downtown, we actually have to cancel portions of trips off of the Vine because we can't get to the stop at Turtle Place. So to keep that on schedule, we essentially skip that loop. We drop people off Midtown, and then we catch back on Mill Plain and head back up to college. So there, you know, there's definitely some opportunity in the downtown corridor for us to try to find a way to work with that. And we've been working with the traffic engineers, and they've been trying to help us find a few solutions. But we know it's out there. Mm-hmm. Problems.
The other thing she brought up, might you have larger font options for seniors with vision problems?
Yeah, we've had a lot of conversations about our booklet. So we have a booklet that has all the schedules in it. You know, I've done it both ways. I've had it where every route has a schedule or every, you know, in a few different languages. And we're reviewing that right now with our external media department. You know, Christine Selk, who's our external affairs manager, she does a great job with that stuff. And she's actually brought that up to me quite a few times that we need to revamp and reevaluate how we do that. So we're trying to see how much service changes we're going to have upcoming in September. Mm-hmm. And that would probably be a good time for us to reevaluate what those look like. The book is rather small because we try to put everything mm-hmm. in the system in the book, yeah. And sometimes that just doesn't work well.
Right. Basically, is CTRAN making it a priority for the aging-in-place population?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it would be fair to say that CTRAN is making it a priority for every customer that we have, and we know that there are specific issues that impact specific segments of our ridership, and we have groups designated to look at each one of those areas to try to improve service. You know, it's no secret that, you know, as we saw on the slide, that by 2030, there's going to be 156% increase in population over 60. We know that's happening. We know that's happening now, and we need to continue to address that. So that's one of our top priorities.
Okay. So did you have final comments you wanted to make?
I just wanted to say thank you so much to the commission. I mean, we are so appreciative. I know Walt and I talk about it all the time. We're so very appreciative of what you do for the community, and we're very thankful for that, and thankful to the counselor as well for the kind words. But very thankful to the commission and appreciate everything you do. And if there's anything that we can do, just let us know. We'd be glad to help.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any other public comments unrelated to our topic? If not, stay tuned next month. We have Human Service Council, and then we have Kevin Chambers also will be talking about some data potential in coordinating public-private partnerships and so on. So hope to see you then. This meeting is adjourned.